This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. This week, the LA Lakers won their third consecutive NBA championship, and their coach Phil Jackson became the league's all-time winner in postseason coaching victories. In addition to Jackson's three Lakers championships, he led the Chicago Bulls to six championships and won twice as a player with the New York Knicks. We're going to listen back to an excerpt of the interview I recorded with Jackson 1 year ago when he and the Lakers were a couple of games away from winning the playoffs against the Philadelphia 76ers. Can you compare the experience of coaching the Lakers and the Bulls?
No. It's still coaching, but it's so different. It's such a different team. It's such a different relationship that I have with the team. I'm the same person in many ways, different group of guys. The team in Chicago were mostly young married men with young families. It was a kind of a community of young kids growing up together, wives and families that were involved and intertwined. There was really a remarkable resilience about that team because they supported each other just unequivocally. Their roles were ordered almost impeccably from Michael through Scottie Pippen down through the order of the players. It just all related very well as to how they had to do it. They could support a character like Dennis Rodman for three years, even though he was, you know, a maverick in many ways. And there was an end in sight. They knew that it was, you know, there was an age in this team. They knew that, hey, we're going to last this year. Maybe we'll get one more year. We got that one more year, and then maybe we could do it again, and we had a three-peat championship. But those players all moved into maybe retirement or moved on or quit the game. And this group is a bunch of young players. It's a different generation. There's very few guys that are married. There's not that community. And yet we have a community that's altogether different and still vibrant and very tight.
I'm wondering if the age difference between you and the players, as you get older and the players stay more or less the same age or even younger than the previous team you coached, if there's certain differences that are difficult to reconcile. And what I'm thinking of particularly is the whole respect thing.
Yeah.
The meaning of respect to a lot of people in their 20s now, and the meaning of disrespect and what can be interpreted as disrespect is probably really different than, for instance, when you were playing or when
Definitely.
You started coaching.
Without a doubt, Terry. I think you hit that point very well, that it's The last time we were in Philadelphia to play, Kobe and I had a little bit of a tiff on the bench, and I actually felt that he was trying to do too much on the court,
mm-hmm.
and he wanted to argue with me, and so I sat him on the bench. And I was willing to sit him in a certain point in the game that I felt was important. Shaq was out of the game, so we were out without two of our stars for that period of time, but I wanted to let him know that I didn't want him to argue with me at that point. When we got in the locker room, we had another discussion. And he felt like I disrespected him by imposing upon him the fact that he was being selfish, again, cubbyholing him into this this curtain. And I said, fine, we'll watch the tape together again and sort it out tomorrow. So I realized, you know, there was that's one disrespect, that, you know, don't pigeonhole me with what you think that I was doing that, you know, is a preconceived idea that you have of my game. And the game itself is played to a little different beat. Hip-hop and that kind of generational, you know, noise that's going on has a lot of kind of gangster not being respected, you know, being oppressed, riding the line, living at the edge, willing to sacrifice yourself for your own honor. Those kind of things, I think, are big parts of the culture in this group of youth right now. And I have to respect that for whatever it's worth. As much as I wanted my elders to respect my particular beliefs that I had in the late 60s about war and about countries going to war and about youth being drafted and so forth. So, I mean, I have to respect where they're coming from and wonder where it's taking them to.
But some of that goes against some of your values, you know, that living on the edge and the speed and a lot of the kind of bragging of rap and the kind of thug aspects of it. That kind of goes against who you are as a coach and what you want from your players as a coach.
Well, the part that I like about coaching is my ability to influence. I've been able to kind of take them through, you know, like violence. Is gun violence appropriate, you know, and the idea of possessing and owning guns and making them think those thoughts. And I like the fact that Martin Luther King Day, we have a game on that day, and I can always talk about, you know, Martin Luther King and peaceful resistance, and, you know, and the ability for people to make things happen without having to take armed stands, you know, and having to defend oneself through rational, reasonable approaches.
Now, you're on camera a lot during the games.
Yes.
Are you conscious of that? And are you trying to maintain a public face knowing that at any minute there might be a cutaway to you?
Well, I think we've all had our embarrassing moments on film that are coaches or players, that you're, you know, either caught in a position where you're yelling or something's happened to you, or, you know, you might even be wiping your nose or whatever. But every action that's a reaction, the camera comes back to you. And I've gotten used to that over the years, and I try to remain really equal about my emotions at that time, and not to vent or not to do anything. But I learned that lesson not so much from the camera, but from, you know, having a player like Dennis Rodman on the team, who fed directly almost off the emotional state of the coach. Mm-hmm. And I realized that the more animated I got, the more animated he felt he had to be, and it would create this chain reaction. And I felt that the calmer and the easier I was on the whole attitude of the game, the better he felt about the game, and the team responded likewise. And so I've tried to maintain that since that time.
Yeah, I like one sports columnist said something like, Phil Jackson uncrossed his leg. You know, like, wow, what emotion he showed.
Yeah, people always say, you're not doing much coaching over there.
I want to quote one more thing from your book, More Than a Game. You say, in 1998, after 44 years of being continuously involved with basketball, I cashed in my chips and, quote, retired after winning my sixth championship with the Bulls. In the middle of the journey that is my life, I had lost my way. What did you mean by that, by having lost your way before getting back to basketball?
Well, really, the career in basketball became, you know, so dominant in my life that I felt like I had lost my kids, my family. It was almost impossible to stay in touch with them at some level with the amount of traveling and everything. And it felt like, you know, somehow or other I kind of lost the whole process of this family that I was very, very, very connected to for many years. And, you know, I went through a period of separation with my wife and, you know, been separated since I've gone to L.A. And for a period of time, it was very devastating for me because I felt like I'd lost my family. But I found that I hadn't lost my family at all. We'd just grown to different positions. And, you know, the kids are here with me in Philadelphia, and it's great. I have five kids and lots of kids, and they love to come to the finals. It's become like a family ritual, and it's amazing that they can be here.
Phil Jackson recorded 1 year ago. This week, he led the Lakers to their third consecutive NBA championship, his ninth championship as a coach. This is Fresh Air.